Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. Check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. Farmer-owned, Vermont-grown, Sunset Lake CBD. Hey listeners, I want to tell you about Music Masters Collective, a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. These events give you the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like the Fab Four, Steve Earle, Richard Thompson, John Scofield, Nels Klein, the Milk Carton Kids, and many more. This June, join the Wait Band, featuring members of the band and the Levon Helm Band with special guests, including Jimmy Vivino, Bob Margolin, Lost Leaders, Chris O'Leary, Cindy Cashdollar, Stony Creek Band, Rob Fraboni, Larry Packer, and so many more at Camp Cripple Creek. This all-inclusive music vacation in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York promises to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience featuring performances, workshops, jams, comfortable lodging, and superb dining. Visit campcripplecreek.com/undermine to register today. That's campcripplecreek.com/undermine.
Osiris.
Do you guys hear that?
Karina's gonna get you.
Play that for any fish fan.
Karina's gonna get you.
And the majority of them would immediately be able to locate it to Nassau Coliseum on April 3rd, 1998, for the second night of Fish's famed island tour. And that's where this episode of Undermine lands. Hi, you're listening to Undermine, Season 4, Episode 52. I'm your host, Tom Marshall, and I'm joined today by my cronies, RJB and Benji Eisen. Say hello, guys.
Hello, guys.
And hello, ladies. Multi-beasts, unit monsters, anyone watching on YouTube, and of course, anybody else listening. Did we do that right? Did we include everyone?
Yeah. I mean, how many multi-beasts do you think are watching?
Tom, that sounds like a joke, but I don't know the punchline. RJ?
Three.
I don't know how you came up with that number. Maybe it's because we have three more concerts to talk about. So this is the second of the island tour shows. We're going to dive into today's hot topic, April 3rd, 1998. So yesterday, Benji gave us a little overview of the venue. RJ, what can you tell us about Fish's spring tours? They toured round the calendar up to a certain point, but by 98, it had been a few years since they did a spring tour.
Yeah, in the U.S. anyway. I mean, they were, you know, doing some support dates and doing some Europe stuff for a while. But from the spring of 91 through spring of 94, they did huge end of winter spring tours. I mean, you know, dozens of shows. And then shifted to summer tours by 95. So I don't know. Is this a tour or is this a run? Because I think toward the end of 4 or 5, Trey says this is getting to the end of this tour here, and they called it the island tour, but was it really a tour or was it a run? I don't know.
It was an Endora bug, and if Brad Sands hadn't come up with the island tour, it would have been the island run or the spring run. But you know, so New Year's Eve in April was fun last year, as the spring, you know, talking about spring dates for fish. But having just done, I did sits of these recent eight. I did the bottom sits of the recent eight that they did out in the West Coast. Oh, cool. And I have to say, I have to throw this in here, and I'm throwing it in anywhere I can get it in. I'm in favor of fish adding Hollywood Bowl as an annual spring weekend. The way that Ditz is, you know, we know that Ditz is every Labor Day weekend, and it's a tradition, and it built and built and built to where it is now. And I feel like Hollywood Bowl, it's just the venue was perfect for that in so many ways. It was the most incredible run, but it's the type of venue, and being in Los Angeles for a spring weekend, I feel it's the type of thing that would just immediately build into what could be a great fish tradition. But in 1998, as we've mentioned, hinted at, and alluded to before, the Island Tour is kind of spiritually linked to 1997. Or, you know, maybe it's a bridge to the summer of 1998, or maybe it's both. You know, it falls in between those two, musically, as well as on the calendar.
I like the idea of the sort of a spring California Hollywood Bowl thing, because we have so many East Coast traditions and festivals sort of wind up here. I mean, apart from maybe one or two, but there's also like you said, Dix is the center of the country. There's no real like tradition on the left coast for all the fans there.
Hollywood Bowl is, I know from a concert stand, it's an expensive venue to play, but It is just such a beautiful venue. And it's like Radio City Music Hall. As anyone that saw the photos from it, it's just, there's an element to it that's just incredible. And everyone's in their own little box. It's the perfect venue for fish to do a West Coast tradition in.
And all us East Coasters look at it and we're like, wow, there's no roof. What do they do in case of rain? And it's like, oh, there's no rain ever. It's 72 every single day.
I think it's a good idea. And thank you for tuning into our episode of What Fish Should Do Next.
Well, let's get to the music. This night opens with a really powerful segment of Mike's song, then Old Home Place instead of Hydrogen into Wikipog. RJ, what do you think of the opening frame?
Well, our friend, my friend Jonathan, who is on the Helping Friendly podcast, he loves Hydrogen, and so he would want me to say that they should have played Hydrogen, but I don't think it matters here. I mean, this Mike's is, first of all, it's a opening, you know, statement with a lot of power. I feel like first set Mike's openers are just like, it means that they're ready to rock. They were comfortable. This was kind of a little bit of a darker kind of jam, but then it kind of like mellows out and it has the true segue into Old Home Place, which is a really nice combo. And man, this just really sets up quite a show. I think we all knew that after this, a Mike's opener, like this was going to be a pretty crazy, crazy show. But this Wikipog gets out there too. And up to this point, I mean, the show before, they hadn't really gotten into the dirty, dark stuff, like, but they did it right away here. And this opening three songs is, perfect. It's perfect. This whole thing's perfect. Benji, what are your thoughts on this opening part of the set?
Well, first of all, I love that Wikipod, just like anybody else that's ever heard it. And then opening with a Might song, opening the show with a Might song, it's like a 0 to 10 moment, you know? And if you look at it now, we talked about the Tube yesterday as being a continuation of 97, and Tube is a huge opener, you know, and one that's extremely rare, but it's just huge. And of course, the following night we have Tweezer, and then the following night after that we have the Okie Pond, You Enjoy Myself. And so they were making statements. They didn't want to warm up. They were warmed up, and
it's a home run, but no one's on base. So it's not a grand slam, but it is a home run.
It's not. Yeah, exactly right. But you know, whereas like maybe opening up with Runaway Jim lets you ease on in and all that, like Fish was sort of saying, look, guys, we came here to play. Let's not mess around.
That's a really good point. And but Tom, as a baseball fan, a leadoff homer, you know, even if you only get one run out of it, it's still a great way to start. So
everyone stands up, and it's an incredible thing. I've seen that. Game. I've seen one. Yes.
Which game? I saw it four times in a row at the Island Tour.
So there's this Wikipog, by the way, according to fish.net, there's a lot going on here. There is teases of the song that would become Mozambique. in this week of Pog. There's a cross-eyed and painless like thing, Nelly Kane, Brazil. I mean, there's a lot going on here. And so, you know, the week of Pog is, even though I feel like always, not always, but most of the time musically, you look at the mics before you look at the week of Pog, or at least I do. I think maybe I'm just not that good at understanding week of Pog because I know a lot of people love them, but I feel like there are more.
It's in Rhode Island.
There are more stellar versions of mics than week of Pog. So like you tend to go for the mics, but this ending of week of Pog is just, it's awesome. Tom, we get there's a train song, Billy Breeze, Beauty of My Dreams. And then we get to Dog Stole Things. And as I was listening back, there's another song that debuted the year before in 97. You know, I have two dogs and I have to say, like, we just got a puppy, you know, to keep our older dog company. And I feel like they're slightly being maligned by this song. And maybe I'm just being sensitive because I just got a new dog, but Is there anything to my concerns about this? Are all dogs bad?
Well, dogs stole things I needed bad. Cats took what I never had. So like they're both being maligned, maybe, or maybe not, but not really. I mean, apart from what the song says.
I already knew that about cats.
Well, dogs and cats have their own agenda. And at night, you have to sort of like you sleep with them in your house. They're animals. And you have to trust them to leave your soul intact. So usually you can, because they're usually harmless. But unless your dogs are demonic, you probably have nothing to worry about, because you don't want them to steal your soul.
Is there any like test you can do for that, or is that just something that you know?
You have to learn by experience.
It's an intuition.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes I think other people's dogs don't have souls, like they need a soul.
Yeah. Wow, that's getting pretty deep.
So they're on the market.
The Reba here, we haven't talked about the Reba. It does not have a jam chart entry on Fishnet. It's not, I think, talked about that much, but I really enjoy it, and I mean, maybe because I like Reba always, but I think this is a great version and another like, you know, piece of the set that kind of holds it together with the mic screws at the beginning.
It's a great Reba. And then of course, My Soul ends the set. And just like that, the time has come for a commercial break. We will be right back.
Hey listeners, I want to tell you about one of our great partners, DistroKid. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100% of their royalties and earnings. If you're a musician and looking to get your music out there, DistroKid is the way to go. DistroKid is available for iOS and Android and is now available in Apple's App Store and the Google Play Store. More than a million artists rely on DistroKid to get their music onto Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all other major streaming services. And with DistroKid, you can upload new releases, see your financial progress, get notified when you've earned royalties, withdraw money from the app, view and share links, check your streaming stats, and a whole lot more. DistroKid has more features than any other music distributor. Check them out today. Go to distrokid.com, that's DistroKid with a capital K, .com/VIP/undermine for a special offer only for our listeners. That's DistroKid, capital K, .com/VIP/undermine. Thanks, DistroKid.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from niche music podcasts that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe Grind Podcast.
I promised you we'd be right back, and even though I wanted to run, here I am. And here we are. We're currently seconds away from lights on, set to night two at Nassau Coliseum for Fish's Island Tour. Do you guys like this set?
Eh. Well, you know, RJ, I'll take your and I'll raise you a lot. At the time, 4-3 set two was my favorite set of the Island Tour. And I say at the time, I think like historically for most of the time between then and now, it's been my favorite set of the Island Tour. It's just in the past couple of weeks, listening back to all four of these nights, lifetimes later, the Providence shows, as you, I think, alluded to, RJ, on our last episode, not only have they withstood the test of time, but they kind of were overlooked in parts of them. And, you know, despite the fact that the Island Tour as a whole is so praised as an entirety, but individually, I think a lot of people look at Nassau and maybe that last set of from Providence. And, you know, the Providence shows have proved to have something in common with the Wu-Tang Clan. They ain't nothing to fuck with. but Nassau, I just compared the Island Tour to Wu-Tang Clan. But Nassau Night 2 has two of my two of my favorite elements of a great night of Fish. And it's like, you know, my equivalent of I guess if they open with Punch You in the Eye, Tom, if these two elements are there, I know it's probably going to be a favorite set that I'm going to listen to for years. Humorous antics, but not just that alone, because anyone can do that. Humorous antics and a musically brilliant Type 2 jam that goes places and that takes its time getting there. So as much as we have a lot in store coming up in Providence, Nassau Night 2 is still my favorite set from this particular island, man. And I mean, from any year, it's my favorite set of music that Fish has played on Long Island.
Well, Benji, like Wu-Tang Clan, I'm still trying to understand this show 25 years later. It just is, it's just a monster,
It's too good. It's too good. The second set, and yeah.
The Roses, you know, that opens the second set. This is a, you know, historic and monumental jam, but there's so much going on. I mean, there's everything. There's dark, there's bliss, there's ambience, there's, you know, effects. There's a lot happening here. But there's only three jam chart entries for Roses Are Free. This one, Big Cypress and Worcester 2012. And, you know, they just kind of brought this out, and maybe it's done as a jam vehicle, but because we're still in a time machine, let's stay on this version. Tom, can we talk, or Benji, anyone who, either of you who want to jump in, this song, of course, is not by Fish. It's by Ween. They played this first on 1211, right, at Rochester, and then MSG on 1231. So why do you guys think they started playing? I mean, clearly there's like a history with Ween and Fish geographically and all that, but like why at this point did they decide to bust this out as a cover?
Doing my research, which is basically just putting headphones on and listening to the show and walking for 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 miles, I stumbled when I got home upon one of our good amazing friends, Osiris collaborators when we can get them, Amar Sastry's Anatomy of a Jam. look it up on YouTube because it explains a lot about this particular Roses Are Free. He goes into very deeply, but also never boring, about actually piecing the jam together, why all of a sudden there's like this amazing quiet part on the fourth beat of the measure. But he does it in such an incredibly interesting and graphic way, and then like Trey hints at B flat seventh mixolydian, and then Paige answers. And when Amar tells you it's happening, you can hear it and you can see it. And it's a completely compelling, amazing thing. And Amar took apart lots of shows and lots of songs with Anatomy of a Jam, but at this one I was completely engrossed, and it's a great Roses Are Free. And basically he kind of just begins by saying Trey was sort of obsessed with Ween, and he got obsessed because Ween and Fish signed with Elektra at the same time, basically. And one of the first albums that Sue Drew, I think their A&R person, handed Trey and said, by the way, these guys, I think they came from somewhere near you guys, near Princeton or somewhere in New Jersey. These guys are signed too. And Trey got, was it Pure Guava, I think, and listened incessantly to it. And then I think Chocolate and Cheese is where this is from. But anyway, it kind of explains it. So check that out, Amar. Shout out to Amar.
I'm going to have to check out the Amar's Anatomy of a Jam. But in layman's terms with this jam, the reason I think my favorite part of it is in the very beginning of the jam. The jam has, it twists and it turns, and it has all these little, wonderful folds to it. But I love the vocalizations that start just as the jam gets going, because that shows you their own excitement. Like, it's almost like the music is just bubbling out of them. So not only on the instruments, but they're actually adding vocalizations. And, I love this this kind of, oh shit, nervous system attack that happens on my body. And I think it happens to everyone inside the arena when everyone realizes it at the same time. That there's this newcomer, this brand new song, as you mentioned, RJ, this unlikely Ween cover that came, Rochester, took us all by surprise. And two times in, it's not a jam vehicle, it's just a quirky cover. And then all of a sudden, we all knew at the same exact moment that, holy shit, they're blowing this wide open. And it's suddenly a monster, totally unexpected type two jam, which, of course, it's no secret, it's my favorite type of jam, unless there's a type three. But the kind that, the kind of type two jam that it literally comes out of nowhere, it comes when you least expect it, and so hit me with the unexpected type two jam. And if it works, well, then 25 years later, I think I'll go on a podcast literally just to high five about it. but, it's not coming out of a Bowie or Down with Disease or a Tweezer where they're all expected. It's when it's in something like Roses Are Free, when it's never been done before. Those moments are the type of moments that I live for.
Yeah. And I think, it's interesting because I think we talked about this on this podcast and probably HF Pod. Like, I think there are jams, Tahoe Tweezer comes to mind, which are not, I mean, they're spontaneous in that they're improvisational music, but there's clearly like an intention to do that. Same to me with the Ruby Waves from Alpine from 2019. Like, I think their time, Trey even said, like, that night they thought that Mercury was going to be the place where they really pushed it, and then it ended up being Ruby Waves. And this is, by contrast, just so, it just feels like you said, Benji, it comes out of nowhere. And Tom, I'm glad you brought up Amar's video. I mean, he's so good at analyzing music and making it easy to understand. There's a part about halfway through this jam where Trey just starts kind of these, like, this very like two note riff. And the way Amar explains it is like Trey is playing smaller voicings because Mike and Paige are taking up more space. And then later on in the jam, Amar shows a chart on each bar, which of the four of them are playing. And then like Trey will drop out on the fourth bar, and there's so much, like, I don't feel like I'm very good at explaining music, but Amar really is. We'll be right back.
there's an amazing attribution too to the two Ween guys, Dean and Gene, kind of marveling that no one figured out that Roses Are Free is sort of their tribute to Prince. And then Amar talks about how Trey and the band got to go to Prince's secret studio for a secret show and saw Prince. And that was where Trey realized what an incredible rhythm guitarist he is. Someone else was doing something and Prince sort of dropped back and played amazing rhythm. And Trey got so obsessed with that. And Amar says that that's what the vocalizations are. They're sort of Princey. And that Fish realizes the Prince roots of this song. And also that Trey was playing kind of Prince rhythm by dropping out, going to three string chords and then to two string chords, just sort of going back while the rest, you know, while Mike and Paige were taking over. And like I said, check out Amar's explanation of it, and it makes perfect sense.
It all makes perfect sense. There is one more part of this I want to talk about, which is that about 23-ish minutes in, you know, it goes into this ambient space, and in in a lot of other situations, it would just go into a ballad or they would go into the next song, and they take a full, you know, minute or so to just kind of sit there. And then Trey picks up this little riff. And if you know it, you know it, but maybe you'll hear it right now. But this just, you know, and it picks it up and gives it another, you know, 10 minutes of life to this jam. It's just unbelievable. But as monstrous as The Roses is, this set, you know, classic four song second set. And the reason I said, you know, earlier is that it wasn't three songs, you know, I mean, four songs is fine, but you know, I'm really chasing a three song second set.
Well, it's five if you count it as Nassau Jam.
True. Good point. Very good point. The Piper that it goes into is just another huge, I mean, there's just nothing else to say besides huge, but there, the end of Piper, the last few minutes, it gets sort of, you know, it's out there and it doesn't really feel like we know where we are anymore. And then Paige starts a piano solo and it doesn't really have anything to do with Loving Cup, but then it eventually ends up into the Loving Cup intro and just such a rocking version. I really love this, that part of the set. I mean, there's what's not to love, you know?
Absolutely. And they kind of like, you know, with Roses and Piper kind of went into, I mean, everyone was loving it audience wise, just because it was weird, but it was weird. There was some bizarre spacey stuff that like, if you wanted to groove, that didn't kind of happen until Loving Cup. And when it came, it was such an amazing, amazing release. Like, and it, like what a Loving Cup and what a perfect place exactly for it in this show and in this tour. But something happened in Loving Cup, RJ, and kind of explains what all this Carini's Gonna Get You stuff happens in Antelope. What is that? Do you want to explain it for some people that might not know?
Well, I don't think I actually saw this when it happened, but a well-intentioned young person who didn't have clothes on ran on stage and
he had shorts.
It's shorts. Okay. He wasn't wearing of his clothes. But he got, I mean, I can't imagine what would happen to you these days if you did that. I wouldn't recommend it because I don't think it's a very good idea. But Carini, Pete Carini, who was, you know, there, I guess. I don't know if he was the first person to be there, if he was the assigned person to.
He was fast on the scene. I mean, this dude, it was like kind of, I think Loving Cup was kind of almost over. They were just coming back into, whoa, what a beautiful buzz. And suddenly from the right, this dude, I imagine he jumped up from the audience. I don't know where he could have come from because he probably couldn't have made it side stage. But anyway, suddenly he appeared from the right and ran in front of Fish, Mike, and Trey, and kind of, you know, he was dancing and he was very athletic because he looked and Carini was running right at him and he just jumped, like, casually stepped into the audience and disappeared. And it was amazing. It was kind of like Trey, everyone was smiling. Paige, because he didn't like go up and like try to, as yeah. you've seen people do, like high five Trey or something. He just was dancing and it was kind of harmless and fun.
So Carini actually didn't get him.
Didn't get him. He just missed.
Just missed.
You know, stage crashers, especially at the time, were kind of an occasional phenomenon that I never fully understood. But I remember watching this one unfold, and I remember, based on the commentary that they were giving, and I think Fishman's commentary about how you can come up here, just know that if you do, Carini's going to get you. I remember thinking, oh, that's a mistake for him to say. He kind of corrected it, too. He said, don't come to the drummer or whatever it was that he clarified. Yeah. But I remember thinking at the time that they're creating a safe space for stage crashers, you know, or maybe establishing that it's not a safe space, but giving them a challenge, you know.
It wasn't the right thing to say.
Wasn't the right thing to say.
But, today's but, professional fish yeah. would not say it.
Would never say, come on stage, but Trini will get you.
Just don't mess with the drummer.
Yeah, and don't mess with the drummer. But, you know, I'm sure Trey loved that. But, you know, coming off a set like that, I don't think anything was a safe space. And, you know, maybe that's the point here, too. Maybe that guy just had his fill of the roses are free.
Yeah. Well, you said, Benji, earlier, like the humor and the music, you know, creates kind of the special thing for this particular show. And, you know, does this antelope, which is like any late 90s antelope or most of them anyways, just so intense and so fiery, and what a great end.
Because of that, RJ, and it has all the elements, right? So when, you know, it's one thing for a band to have a lot of humor. It's one thing for a band to just be focused on improvisational jams or lyric, you know, lyrics that are poetry. But, you know, Fish, as we've documented time and time and time again, they have all these elements and a million more. They're, you know, they're a dance band, they're a funk band, they're a jazz band, they're a spaceship, you know, taking off. And this night had it all. So I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to correct what I said earlier, where I said this was my favorite setup from this island. I think this was my favorite overall package show from the four nights. It's just, it's very tough competition with what we have coming up the next two nights. But there's just something fishy about this night that I really loved. Something extra fishy.
Yeah, especially, I mean, first set was great, but set two, there's something totally unbelievably magic, you know, can never be repeated. And like, also just like, thank your lucky stars kind of thing that you were in the room. I mean, it was completely outrageous and unbelievable Fish. And listening back, it like all comes back to me with huge amount of emotion.
So we can't end this without talking about the encore, which is of course Carini, Into Haley's, and then Tweezer Reprise, which, you know, there's a lot of videos that exist that show Trey in full kind of rock star moment. A lot of them are from 98 actually, but I think this video of him during Tweezer Reprise, it's possibly the top. I mean, this is like, he's just at the top of his rock star game and just strutting around the stage playing Tweezer Reprise. And it's so fun to watch and such a great way to cap a show. But just watching that video still, it just gets me fired up.
It's the best. And I saw it labeled as, and once you hear this, you'll never not see it. It's Trey's dinosaur stomp. And it's the dinosaur. It's yes. a dinosaur stomp.
It's also his victory lap. He deserved it this night. You know, he got touchdowns. You know, throughout.
He wanted to play a whole other concert. He was ready to play completely. Just keep going. But it was amazing. Everyone left after that. Carini, like, what do we do now? Well, how do you make 20,000 people drive from Long Island to Rhode Island? Play that Tweezer Reprise. Because it was amazing. Tomorrow we're hopping islands, and we will meet you on 4/4/98. Divine Providence. Undermine is brought to you by Osiris Media. executive producers are Tom Marshall, RJB, and there's another person. Oh, yeah, Benji Eisen. Edited by Eric Limarenko, mixed and mastered by Matt Dwyer. Production assistance from Nick Sejas. Original music by Amar Sastry. Art by Mark Dowd. Thank you.
Tom, before we officially end, tomorrow when we talk about 498, will you tell us about anything you remember about the bus ride from Long Island to Rhode Island?
Yes. Anything I remember.
Okay. Stay tuned for that. Bye.
And a few things you don't.
Osiris.
Hey, music fans. We wanted to let you know about Music on the Mountain, a show that will feature Anders Osborne, Dogs in a Pile, and Saints and Liars. This show will be directly after the Divided Sky Foundation's fun run at 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 18th at the base of Akemo Mountain in Ludlow, Vermont. The show is presented by The Phoenix, a national nonprofit organization offering support to those in recovery and anyone impacted by substance use to celebrate recovery. If you're running in the Divided Sky Foundation's fun run, you'll be automatically registered for the show. It's a family-friendly event, and all proceeds from ticket sales and other donations benefit the Divided Sky Foundation. Visit Music on the Mountain, that's musiconthemtn.com, for more info and to get tickets. That's musiconthemtn.com. Hope you enjoy.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.